And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. One of my favorite historical misquotes concerns our topic of conversation today, intellectual property. Holland Duell was the USA's Commissioner of Patents, in other words, the top man at the America's Patent Office at the turn of the 20th century, around 1898-1901, and he's supposed to have said, everything that can be invented has been invented, but I hasten to add that this has been debunked and refuted numerous times. Well, today we're not just talking about patents and inventions, but also the complex network of legal and commercial regulations and relationships which protect ideas and those who, through their ingenuity, labor, and money, create them, and above all, why these things are important. The very heart of the question we shall examine is, should one legally protect novelty, creativity, and invention, and is it right to do so? The headquarters of the global institution charged with this function is the World Intellectual Property Organization, or WIPO, and many of you listening to this show will know that it is based here in Geneva. In fact, I'm in WIPO this morning, and I'm the guest of Francis Gurry as Director General, whose impressive office at the top of the elegant blue-glass skyscraper has a view to die for over the city of Geneva and towards Mont Blanc and the Alps. And Francis Gurry has many, many years of experience in the organization and a deep knowledge of the complexities of intellectual property, usually known as IP. Together, we're going to try to examine more closely some of these complex matters so that I and you, the listeners, can all grasp the important issues better. And my hope being that after about 10 or 15 minutes, we shall emerge with our understanding improved and our level of knowledge raised. Francis, good morning, and thank you for welcoming me to your marvelous office, and through me, our WRS listeners in the Geneva region, across Switzerland and beyond.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you very much
for
this opportunity. It's a pleasure to have you here, and it's a privilege to be interviewed by the David Frost of Geneva.
Flattery will get you anywhere. Francis, my first question is simply to help me understand why we need to have such a large organization as yours dealing with what seems to me to be an essentially legal and commercial matter, namely the registration of patents. And those, you must have many thousands of staff here, and it always seems to me that you're building new premises. So what's the point of WIPO?
Yes, well, it's a very good question, if I may say, because we do have a communication problem. I mean, what we really stand for is innovation and creativity. That's the purpose of the organization. And intellectual property is a means of encouraging and having innovation and creativity, cultural creativity.
So it's a facilitation role.
That's right. And so calling us the World Intellectual Property Organization is a bit like calling the World Health Organization the World Vaccines Organization.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
You have vaccines in order to have health.
Yeah.
We're really standing for innovation. Why do we need innovation and creativity? Well, look, innovation is a source of major source of economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a source of better employment. It improves our quality of life. It's mm-hmm. the way in which we as a society address challenges like climate change, like food insecurity. It's through new technological advances. And the quote you started with, saying everything that had been invented needed to be invented had been invented. Well, as you know, the statistics show otherwise.
Yeah,
we have around about 1.4 million new inventions that are for which a patent is applied.
Just say that number again.
1.4 million.
That's a huge number.
It's a huge number of new inventions. A lot of creative people around the world. And, of course, the basis of our society and economy is increasingly technological.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also the way in which enterprises, industries, and countries secure a competitive advantage by having the greater, the better technology, the better innovations.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, let's not forget that whole area of cultural creativity, the musicians, authors, writers, performers, the film producers, the actors, all of those involved in the creative industries, which are really whose economic contribution is secured by copyright, and that is the mechanism by which society as a whole returns some value to creators.
So you lead me really very well into my second question, because my second question encompasses really a global perspective on this. I've been, as you know, an occasional visitor to this building over many years, and I know that one of the charges against you at WIPO is that you defend the rich and powerful nations and their inventors, the large corporates, individuals, against the little man and the poorer countries, often called the South. Isn't that the case that the North America, Canada, the EU, the G8, even Switzerland here hold all the aces and pull all the levers, mixing metaphors? And in fact, the North is really a brake on cost-effective development and new ideas. I've in mind in particular the battle over generics, protection of patents in the pharma industry, in science, technology, increasing agricultural yields. I mean, what's your view on this whole North-South issue?
Vital question that you raise. It's true that the producers of innovations, the biggest producers of innovations and cultural products, entertainment, are the countries of the so-called North, the industrialized countries. There's no doubt about that. But that's a resource like any other. I mean, you also have petroleum as a resource. And we don't hear a criticism that certain countries are the possessors of the largest reserves of petroleum.
But that was God-given in a way, wasn't it?
Well, that's the point, and that's a very interesting point, because you either have petroleum or you don't.
Yeah.
If you don't have innovation, creativity, you can acquire it.
Mm.
Japan is a country without any resources. Mm-hmm. Republic of Korea is a country without any natural resources.
Yeah.
Switzerland's a country without any natural resources. They're the ones also who, not coincidentally, are the greatest innovators and creators in the world. But the fact is, of course, that we do have an imbalance in the production of new technology and, to some extent, creative works around the world. And that points to an important role of intellectual property, which is finding the appropriate balance between all of the competing interests that surround innovation or creativity. So you have the interests of the individual creator. You know, who is going to reward the person who is putting in the effort to actually do the scientific research and produce the breakthrough that is going to improve our quality of life?
But tell me a little bit more about that lovely word, appropriate balance, because the playing field isn't level anyway. So how do you find what is appropriate in a place like this with all the countries?
Yeah, well, you mentioned the example of pharmaceuticals, which is one of the most controversial and one of the most hot topics politically in the field of intellectual property.
Yeah.
Well, there you have a balance between, on the one hand, you know, this enormous expense of the development of a new drug. Pharmaceutical companies estimate it's in excess of $1 billion to develop a new drug.
And part of this is the time it takes to bring it to market.
Time to bring to market. Yeah. And they need to have some means of recovering that investment in order to invest further and to enable us to be more innovative than the microbes. And they are very innovative, especially in highly densely populated, highly urbanized world in which we live. So you give the innovators patent protection, a period of time which they can exclusively exploit their invention, and you give them something called data exclusivity, which is all the money and time that they invest in developing the regulatory dossiers. On the other hand...
Well, before you go on, when you say you give... Who's
society?
You? Society. So this is a consensus coming through international organisations.
I'd
that
say
how
this
works?
Is the bargain at the basis.
Yeah.
So that's on the one hand, but on the other hand, there's no good. It's no use in having a nice new medical breakthrough or an innovation unless the social benefit of that can be shared.
Yeah.
So you have to find that. That's the balance question. Mm. So the period of time of the exclusive commercial exploitation is limited. It's not forever, first of all. Secondly, generic companies are a legitimate part of the competitive structure in society, and they can come in, since they don't have the research and development costs, they can come in and they can provide the drug at the end of the patent term at lower costs and provide the necessary competition to get it out there. And then there are a range of other public policy measures that can be taken, like price control that exists in many countries, to ensure that we get this balance correct. And I think that's one of the key roles of intellectual property, finding appropriate balance.
So this is done essentially by negotiation, and that's
exactly
the point of it being here, and that's the point of it being so large, because there are so many countries that are in the United Nations.
Exactly.
But just to go on to that a little bit deeper, there are other dimensions to this issue. I mean, you've got the legal profession, you've got businesses who either employ lawyers on their payroll or have them as consultants. These also have an important role to play in this whole debate, don't they? Because some of this patent law, from what I understand, is extremely complicated.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate criticism of the patent system, is that it is extremely complex, and it's there to serve you know, a relatively simple function at the end of the day. So we do have a big infrastructure built up around innovation. Of course, innovation is a key topic these days. I mean, everyone is talking about innovation. The Wall Street Journal published an article in 2012 in which they'd done a survey of the quarterly and annual filings at the Securities Exchange Commission by all the companies, and they found the word innovation had appeared in them 35,500 times. So it's almost a fetish, as one economist has said. But it's a point of focus for a good reason. The basis of competition is increasingly focused on this innovation, and since intellectual property rights capture the economic value and the competitive advantage of innovation, we see that they're increasingly the battleground for competition. And we see that in the smartphone patent wars. And there are many other examples in which fierce competition is occurring in relation to intellectual property rights.
So you've brought me very conveniently round to the question I wanted to examine before we close, and that's the evidence that there is that developing and even poor countries can invent and innovate at the rate necessary to keep up with this treadmill of advanced development, where ever higher added value, and that's the issue, I think, drives economies forward. This is a great example, living in Switzerland, as you said, with no natural resources except the ingenuity of the people. Please explain a little bit more about how these complex issues should be seen from your perspective, helping the poor countries, the developing countries, to be better and to get a bigger share of the economic pie.
Well, I'd say that if you look across the last the period since the Second World War, you can see good evidence that some countries have done this. This was the case with Japan. This was the case with the Republic of Korea. This is the case with China. We're seeing this happen. So strategy matters.
At the national level.
And policy matters.
At the corporate level, I suppose.
Right. And policy matters. So you see that they've been through a sort of a cycle of heavy industry going into light industry, going into more knowledge-based and more knowledge-intensive industries. You know, and that's a cycle which is basically dependent upon knowledge and intellectual property.
And you see these things with some sense of confidence, or do you think we should be apprehensive about this kind of development?
I'd say it's not easy to do. So the three examples that I've given you, that was an enormous, you know, national effort on the part of fairly cohesive societies and economies. So it's not an easy thing to do, but we can point to those examples, and we can point to why it is important to invest in the innovation infrastructure, which starts with your education system, actually. Your education systems and goes right through to, it's a very complex ecosystem.
In the general sense, not just university education,
schooling for the children
all the way through.
Exactly. Yeah. And the role of intellectual property is to translate, you know, ideas into commercial products, or to translate intellectual assets into commercial assets in that innovation ecosystem. Now, it's not an easy task, and one of our roles as an institution is to try to provide some assistance to countries to point out, first of all, the importance of paying attention to this area, and then secondly, to help, where possible, to develop strategies, intellectual property and innovation strategies, to bring them to a higher level of value added. And I think that's the aim.
And just one last question before we close in. How do you do that? I mean, you're doing that as a centralized organization from, you know, your sort of headquarters here in Geneva, or do you actually have people in the field that are doing that, or is it really a tandem project where you do that locally?
It's a
locally,
bit tandem, but we are highly centralized, and I think always will be as an organization. We are... we have 98% of our staff in Geneva.
Oh, the vast majority.
Vast majority. Mm. But we do have small external offices. We have external offices in Rio de Janeiro, Tokyo, Singapore, and this year we'll add one in Beijing and in Moscow. But these are small operations that help, obviously, in spreading the word and in providing a higher quality of service. But otherwise, we are sending people into the field and, of course, leveraging external resources that exist in the field.
Great. So it's a very positive story. And I just wanted to thank you for having me here this morning in your office and illuminating many of the things that I found puzzling to understand. It's been a lot of beneficial discussion this morning. Francis Gurry, DG of WIPO, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Michael.
That was the McKay Interview with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.